we start the Bhagavatam time class, I just wanted to read you a little extraction from Lilamrita. This is in New York and it's 1971. It's in July. In New York, Prabhupada lectured gravely and authoritatively from Srimad Bhagavatam, stressing surrender to Krishna through surrendering to the Krishna consciousness movement. Unlike any other Bhagavatam lecturer, Prabhupada was able to offer a movement, a society, and a way of life that were fully Krishna conscious and that gave any interested person practical entrance into the devotional service of the Lord. Someone asked how a person who had been very sinful could be relieved of his karma, and Prabhupada replied simply, "Come and live with us, that's all. Is it very difficult? Our students, they are living with us. You simply come and live with us, and you are free from all karma. Is it difficult? Then do that. We shall give you food. We shall give you shelter. And we will give you nice philosophy. If you want to marry, we shall give you a good wife or husband. What do you want more? So come and live with us, that's all." Prabhupada stressed this same point in his lectures. If a person seeking spiritual fulfillment lived and served with the ISKCON devotees, even material fulfillment would come. These Krishna-conscious boys and girls in 60 centres, they are living in the best houses. They are eating the best food. They are on the best consciousness. They are in the best consciousness. They have got the best hope, everything best. Their future of body is best. What material happiness do you want more than this? They have got wife, children, happiness, home, everything, full. So material happiness is nothing to a Krishna conscious person. Material happiness will roll at his feet saying, "Please take me, please take me." There is no need of asking for it. Simply be steady and ask Krishna, "Please engage me in your service." Then your satisfaction will automatically come. Don't bother for material happiness. Nandakishore asked, "What happens to a person on the street if we just give him one Simply Wonderful?" So Simply Wonderful is a milk sweet made from milk, powder, sugar, and sometimes we add some fruits to it. So he says, "What happens if a person on the street, if we give him one Simply Wonderful or some prasadam?" Prabhupada, "Then it is wonderful, simply wonderful." The devotees laughed. "He has not tasted such wonderful sweet in his life. Therefore you give him wonderful. And because he is eating that wonderful sweet, one day he will come to your temple and become wonderful. Therefore it is simply wonderful. Go on distributing this simply wonderful. Your philosophy is simply wonderful. Your prasadam is simply wonderful. You are simply wonderful. And your Krishna is simply wonderful. The whole process is simply wonderful. Krishna acts wonderfully and is acting wonderfully. Who can deny it?" Then one of the devotees declares, "Prabhupada is simply wonderful." Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate
vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 21, Text 13, is that correct? 13, okay. Sorry? 21, 13, yeah. Rishi Uvacha.
Rishi Uvacha.
Rishi Uvacha. drishtam.
Sorry?
What's up there today? It's all mixed up, is it? Is that actually... What verse is up there today? It says 13. What's the first line of the verse? Rishi Uvacha. Is that yesterday's verse? Okay. Let's just try and we'll try and chant it together, and I'll just chant it the rest of it by myself. We'll just do that word for word. Justam Balad Akila Sattva Rase Samsidhyam Akshnos Tava Darshanan Na Yad Darshanam Janmabhir Idya Sadbir Asasate Yogino Rudha Yoga. I'll just chant now. You can try and chant along if you like, but it might be hard to. Rishi Uvacha. Justam Batadya Kila Satvarase. Samsidhyam Akshnos Tavadharsananna. Yadharsanam Janmabir Jaya Sabhi Idya Sadbir. Asasate Yogino Rudha Yoga. Rishi Uvacha. Justam Batadhyakila Satvarase. Samsidhyam Akshnos Tavadharsananna. Yadharsanam Janmabhi Idyasadbhi. Asasate Yogino Rudha Yoga. The great sage said, Justam is attained. Bata says, ah. Adya, now. Akila, all. Sattva, of goodness. Rase, who are the reservoir. Samsidhyam, the complete success. Akshno, of the two eyes. Tava, of you. Darshanat, from the sight. Na, by us. Yat, of whom. Darshanam, sight. Janmabhir, through births. Idya, O worshipable Lord. Sadbhir, gradually elevated in position. Asasate, aspire. Yogina, yogis. Ruta Yoga, having obtained perfection in yoga. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. The great sage Kardama said, O Supreme Worshipful Lord, my power of sight is now fulfilled, having attained the greatest perfection of the sight of you, who are the reservoir of all existences. Through many successive births of deep meditation, advanced yogis aspire to see your transcendental form. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is described here as the reservoir of all goodness and all pleasure. Unless one is situated in the mode of goodness, there is no real pleasure. When therefore one's body, mind and activities are situated in the service of the Lord, one is on the highest perfectional stage of goodness. Kadama Muni says, "Your Lordship is the reservoir of all that can be understood by the nomenclature of goodness, and by experiencing you face to face, eye to eye, the perfection of sight has now been attained." These statements are the pure devotional situation. For a devotee, the perfection of the senses is to engage in the service of the Lord. The sense of sight, when engaged in seeing the beauty of the Lord, is perfected. The power to hear, when engaged in hearing the glories of the Lord, is perfected. The power to taste, when one enjoys by eating prasad, is perfected. When all the senses engage in relationship with the personality of Godhead, one's perfection is technically called bhakti yoga, which entails detaching the senses from material indulgence and attaching them to the service of the Lord. When one is freed from all designated conditional life and fully engages in the service of the Lord, one's service is called bhakti yoga. Kadama Muni admits that seeing the Lord personally in bhakti yoga is the perfection of sight. The exalted perfection of seeing the Lord is not exaggerated by Kadama Muni. He gives evidence that those who are actually elevated in yoga aspire in life after life to see this form of the personality of Godhead. He was not a fictitious yogi. Those who are actually on the advanced path aspire only to see the eternal form of the Lord. So we can repeat the translation together. The great sage Kardama said, "O Supreme Worshipful Lord, my power of sight is now fulfilled. Having attained the greatest perfection of the sight of you, who are the reservoir of all existences. Through many successive births of deep meditation, advanced yogis aspire to see your transcendental form." So the ultimate goal of yoga is to understand and surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Of course, in modern times, there are many different assessments of what yoga means. We have many yoga societies and yoga clubs, mainly people practicing hatha yoga and expecting different types of rewards from those types of yoga, either for physical or mental well-being. But ultimately, that yoga, for most people, is not connected with the real goal of yoga. And the real goal of yoga, of course, is to link up with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the ultimate goal of yoga. So this process is elaborated in this chapter of the Bhagavatam, specifically focusing on the activities of Kardama Muni and how he meditated for many thousands of years. So, in order to realize the Supreme. So this was in Satyayuga, which was a very different age to the one we're living in now, when meditating for such a long time was possible. But in Kali Yuga, our life is very, very short. Prabhupada refers to it as this spot life. So if you look at it on the scale of the the time of the world, which is hundreds of millions of years, even billions of years, our life has gone like that. And as mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, in this age of Kali, men have but short lives. They are lazy, they are unlucky, they are misguided, and above all, they are always disturbed. So we don't have a lot going for us in Kali Yuga. We've got a lot stacked up against us, actually. So it's very difficult to make progress in this age in the practice of yoga. So the special mercy in this age is that we have a very easy process. It's mentioned in Bhagavatam. Kali dosha nidhi raja asti eko mahan gunaha kirtanadi krishna sha mukta sangha paramvajit. So in this age of Kali, there's hardly any good qualities. But the one redeeming feature is that simply by chanting the holy name of the Lord, one can attain all perfection. So it's Lord Chaitanya's special mercy in this age, this process that we've been given. Simply chanting the Lord's name. Of course, it sounds easy, but of course there are many rules and regulations that follow on from that. And chanting Hare Krishna successfully requires determination. It actually requires to do it properly. Of course, we have a habit of maybe taking it lightly and not focusing intensely on the holy name of the Lord. It is all potent and it has the power to liberate one. But of course, it must be taken seriously and applied appropriately in order to achieve success. There's another verse in Bhagavatam, Tasmadi kena manasa bhagavan sapatam pati srotavya kititavyascha deo pujasta nichada. With single-pointed attention, one must hear about, remember and worship the personality of Godhead, who is the protector of the devotees. So one must be focused and single-minded to achieve success in bhakti yoga. To achieve success in anything in this world requires some determination, and you've got to stick to it to get the result. Of course, the wonderful thing about Vedic culture and Vedic civilization is that it's all geared towards that upliftment of people and bringing them to the ultimate goal of life. And to achieve success in that, as we've said, it requires determination and steadfastness. Lord Krishna also confirms in the Bhagavad Gita, he says, Vyava Syat Mika Buddhi Eki Ha Kurunandana Baho Syaka. That those who are on this path are resolute in purpose. One who is serious about attaining Krishna, he's got to be resolute. We have chased so many things in this material life, birth after birth, with resolute determination. The Prabhupada is encouraging us, just give this one life to Krishna. So those who are on this path, Krishna is suggesting to us, their aim is one. But those who are irresolute, the intelligence becomes many branched. And when the intelligence is many branched, of course the mind takes over. And then the mind takes us all over the universe, chasing different things. Anything other than than what we really need, which is devotional service to the Supreme Lord. So the process of yoga, Prabhupada says, of course, the main purpose of practicing yoga, of course, is to control the mind. And when the mind is controlled, then one can focus and make progress in spiritual life. So Srila Prabhupada has given us a process for doing that. Engaging the mind in so many different services. And of course we have our sadhana that we need to follow. You've got to get first things first, as we say. So you've got to follow your sadhana. And then you'll apply yourself to some particular work in devotional service to help focus the mind. And there are many different opportunities in this kind for all sorts of service, according to our propensities and proclivities. Because for those who are living in the ashram, you don't always have the choice of service. It's like you're a private in the army, you know. So when you sign up, you've got to be prepared to do anything and everything that is given to you by your superiors. But generally all those services were given to help us to have a focus. And in one sense, it's an imitation of the spiritual world where, what are they doing there? Everyone is focused on serving Krishna. They have a service to do, and that is their relationship with Krishna. And so a devotee, if we want to advance in Krishna consciousness, we apply ourselves to that service that's given to us and stick to it steadfastly. And that becomes a source of samadhi. Right? When we think of samadhi, we think of the yogi, you know, sitting in his yogic posture and he's meditating very deeply. Of course, that is one type of samadhi, but Prabhupada also says any service to Krishna is in fact samadhi, if you're doing it properly. If you're doing book distribution and you're completely focused on that, you can be in samadhi on book distribution. Or if you're cooking for Krishna, or cleaning the temple, or dressing the deity, you're 100% focused. That is samadhi. And that is the symptom of the spiritual world. Right? The devotees are all, at every moment, they're thinking of Krishna. And Krishna is also thinking of them. That is their life. They're completely focused on Krishna. Of course, we have abandoned that relationship. And we've ended up here. We didn't want that option. We wanted a separate option. And of course, Krishna has given us that facility. I mean, this material world is created just so we can be separate from Krishna and to live out our fantasies in trying to maintain that separateness. But the whole sojourn in this material world is meant to bring us to that point of realizing, I have no life apart from Krishna. I have no life apart from Krishna. That is the purpose of my being. Krishna expands himself into so many different entities for loving exchanges. So we have turned our backs on that loving exchange, and we have chased all types of phantasmagoria in this material world. But I think for all of us, our realization is that with all of our struggles to try and enjoy, we always come to a dead end, isn't it? It always results in frustration. But it's meant to. Otherwise, how are we going to learn? The material world is a house of reform, Prabhupada says. So when you are sent to a place of reform, you get disciplined. So we're being disciplined by this material energy. One name for Maya Devi, or Durga, Durga Devi. So the word Durga means, it's broken down to two parts, difficult. Isn't it? Dua means difficult and ga means going. So it's her job in this material world to make the going difficult. And we've all experienced that, isn't it? The going is difficult. Being born is difficult. Growing up is difficult. Maintaining yourself throughout your life is difficult. And dying will be difficult. Because we've forgotten our last death. And it's coming up. We don't know when, but it will come up. It's guaranteed. Isn't it that saying they have? There's only two things in this world which are guaranteed. That's death and taxes. Right? Death and taxes. So that death will come up for us. Of course, for a devotee, if he's fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness, then he steps on that. Goes to Krishna. Of course, Prabhupada also qualifies that. He says that we have to be without any tinge of material desire. And it's unfortunate for us that Krishna will never interfere with our independence. Right? So our independence, we're our own worst enemy sometimes. It's like we're trying to light a fire of bhakti to Krishna, but we're pouring water on that by our material desires and things that we are distracted by. So we have to work. We have to work on it. We have to work hard on that. And not be complacent, of course. We are thinking we've got plenty of time, isn't it? There's always time. when it comes to surrendering to Krishna. Are we surrendering today? Or are we too busy with all these other things we've got to do? So if you don't practice surrender throughout your life, it's not that at the time of death you all of a sudden say, Krishna, I am yours. It won't happen like that. You've got to be practicing now, surrendering now with your body, mind and words, with your very being. You know, Krishna, I am yours. Surrendering to your guru, surrendering to Krishna. So if you practice that, if you develop a deep attachment to your service and to the process of bhakti, then at the time of death your life will be successful. It's not like then at the time of death you're all of a sudden going to turn around and go the other way. You'll be attached to Krishna. You'll be focused on Krishna. So life is a serious business in many ways. As mentioned in the Gita, perception of the evil of birth, death is one of the symptoms of knowledge. So material life is difficult. There are many tests on the way, and of course one must be determined, and that determination grows in the association of devotees as long as one follows the process, chanting the Hare Krishna mantra with determination and faith. One requires strength in spiritual life. It's a very potent process. A very potent process. As Lord Chaitanya said, Harinam, Harinam, Harinam eva kevalam. Kalo nasteva, 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 gati anyata. For success in this age of Kali, there is no other way. No other way, no other way. It's mentioned that in Sanskrit, that if something is very profound or unavoidable or very important, it is stressed three times. So if we're thinking self-realization in this age of Kali, there is another option. And Lord Chaitanya has made it very clear. There's no other way, no other way, no other way. Right? So never underestimate your chanting of Hare Krishna. It's your juice of life. If you take it very seriously, you'll get all perfection. If we are half-hearted about it, then you may fall short. Chaitanya Charitamrita, we hear Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sadhya Kavanoi Sravanadi Sudha Chitta Karaye Udhoi. Pure love for Krishna is eternally established in the hearts of living entities. It is not something to be gained from another source. When the heart is purified by hearing and chanting, this love naturally awakens. So when we come to this material world, we've turned our backs on Krishna, as was explained, and we've given up that loving reciprocation with Krishna. And then following our lusty desires in this material world, we've chased so many things. But that love is not gone. It's still sitting there. Right? And all we have to do is reawaken our original consciousness, cleanse the heart, and we'll come to our original position. So the process for doing that is, as we've explained, is following the steps in bhakti yoga and practicing it sincerely, and that surely will achieve success. One time Srila Prabhupada was, I think he was having a walk with some of his disciples, and he asked them, are you convinced? And different answers were coming back, but mainly they were saying, yes, Prabhupada, we're convinced. And then Prabhupada said, well, why are you so complacent? Why are you so complacent? So So our tendency is like that. We tend to be a little lazy, a little complacent about the necessity to surrender and to surrender to Krishna. So we have to work on that if we want to be successful. So Krishna also confirms in Bhagavad Gita that one should practice yoga with undeviating determination of faith. One should abandon without exception all desires born of false ego and control all the senses and all the sides by the mind. So of course the uncontrolled senses cause us great trouble, and it's the duty in practicing yoga that one controls that mind, and then gradually the senses will come under control, and then gradually one will rise to the platform of goodness. And of course, as confirmed by Krishna, from the mode of goodness real knowledge develops. I just wanted to focus on some other points of this purport and chapter, actually. The verses leading up to the one we've read today, of course, focus on the Akadama Muni. He prayed to the Supreme Lord to appear before him. And he has also prayed during his meditation to find a suitable partner. Of course, Kadama's job is to create progeny. So Prabhupada mentioned that the great sages and great saints and kings, they first of all focused on achieving perfection before creating progeny. For some of us, we get it around the other way. We create the progeny and then we think about becoming perfect. And that's often the case in Grihastha life. And of course, Grihastha life is faced with many, many challenges. So better to get it right before you start, because after you start and then think about getting perfection, it's going to be hard. Anyone who's married, we all know that there's so many challenges which take the focus off achieving success in spiritual life, and they're unavoidable. But it is possible to make a little bit of progress in Grihastha life if one is steady and sincere. We have seen that in our society, some of the most successful devotees, in fact, are some of our grihasthas. We're about to read about the coming together of Devahuti and Kadama Muni. So they became a very powerful team. Very powerful. She was a greatly qualified yogini. She was the son, she was the daughter, sorry, of a great king, Swayambhuva Manu. So she was highly qualified. So she was living as a princess in, you know, in ultimate luxury. But she desired to be united with Kadama Muni, who was living as a sage in the forest. He was dressed in rags, but she was very attracted to him. And so, like I said, they became a powerful team. And they were, of course, this is going back a long time back in the history of the world. But it was their duty to create appropriate progeny to populate the universe. And they are very qualified. And of course, the Supreme Lord, Kapila, he appeared as the son of Devahuti. So they're very special. And that relationship was very special. Sometimes we hear that, isn't that a common saying we have, that behind every good man is a good woman? Is it? We hear that. So in the case of Kadama Muni, it was absolutely true. Absolutely true. And with that coming together, that union was very powerful. As it mentions later on in the Bhagavatam, as we read about the history of Kadama and Devahuti, Śrīla Prabhupāda mentions that woman is a power of inspiration to man. Power of inspiration. And by that, if you get a qualified husband, you've got a qualified wife, then they can achieve greatly. But even especially in our society, we've seen good husband and wife combinations. They come together and they become stronger by that union, and they do great service and great preaching often. There's a certain mentality that the male has, and there's a certain mentality the female has. And that's a powerful combination when it comes together. It becomes very potent. And of course, throughout the Bhagavatam, I guess this is probably the prime example of the best way to have a relationship. Kadama Muni was looking for the wife of similar disposition, so he could execute his duty. He desired to create progeny in that qualified wife. And then, of course, as this story unfolds, we will see the wonderful result of that union of Kadama and Devahuti. And Prabhupada also mentions here about, why is it important to understand all this genealogy of these great sages and great kings, because of their example and their behaviours and what they achieved. We want to hear about them. Isn't it? In the Bhagavatam, there are so many narrations about these great souls. Why? To give us some direction of how to interact with material energy and how to make our lives successful, our spiritual lives successful. So we want to hear about them, how they did it, how they achieved it. And of course, something which is perhaps more familiar to us, it's the first thing we read is Bhagavad Gita. And we hear about Arjuna's struggles to achieve success in life. And just by following Lord Krishna's instructions and surrendering unto him, then he gets over the line, isn't it? Of course, there's some trepidation there in the beginning, but he listens intently to the instructions of the Supreme Lord, and ultimately he's successful. So we have the narrations of all these great souls to encourage us in spiritual life. We follow their examples and their paths. We become absorbed in their activities. And it's mentioned in many places throughout the Bhagavatam, just by hearing the narrations of these great souls, one achieves many benefits, isn't it? Of course, that ultimate benefit is liberation. So the couple of other verses I just wanted to quote here from Chaitanya Charitamrita. Anyabhilasita sunyam yana kama janavritam anukulyena krishna anu siranam bhakti uttama. So these verses are relevant to today's discussion. When first class devotional service develops, one must be devoid of all material desires. Knowledge obtained by monistic philosophy and fruitive action. The devotee must constantly serve Krishna favourably as Krishna desires. And then further, sarva pari vinimuktam tat paradvena nirmalam rishikena rishikesha sevanam bhakti vuchute. Bhakti or devotional service means engaging all of our senses in the service of the Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the master of all the senses. When the spirit soul renders service unto the Supreme, there are two side effects. One is freed from all material designations, and one's senses are purified simply by being employed in the service of the Lord. Of course, for a devotee, the simplest thing is to become desireless for anything personal and simply desire the service and satisfaction of Krishna. That is the sole motivation, as we've mentioned before, of the residents of the spiritual world. They're focused on that, on serving Krishna. And of course, if we want to please Krishna, we have also have to please his devotees. And Krishna says in the it's in the 11th canto, isn't it, where Krishna states that one who claims to be my devotee is not my devotee, but one who is a devotee of his devotees is his real devotee. Isn't it? So we have to try and please the devotees of the Lord in order to make progress in spiritual life. And this is the best formula for success. And it also brings the happiness which we're hankering for. Prabhupada also mentions that the gopis, their enjoyment increases a millionfold when they work to satisfy and fulfill the service of Radharani to Krishna. So it increases a millionfold. So by serving the devotees, one is making it easier to advance in spiritual life. So we'll wind up there, and we'll ask if there's any questions or any comments. Free will.
Yeah. Though Lord Krishna has given us limited free will,
yes,
the living entities tend to abuse it unlimitedly.
That's right.
Does Krishna not know that living entities will not use this free will not in the right way? So would it not have been better if Krishna has not given us the free will at all, or Krishna made to ensure
It's an interesting question. It's a deep question. So your final statement then was?
Why at all Krishna gave us the free will?
Yes.
Having known that it will not be used.
I guess he's taken a chance because he has to give free will to living entities. He doesn't create pure devotional service machines. You know, a machine, you just turn it on and it just does automatically what it's meant to do, right? So he has to give independence to the living entity so that he can choose how to serve Krishna and how to satisfy Krishna. He's not just a pure devotional service machine. And by giving us that free will, he gives us the opportunity to even increase and come up with different ways to engage in service to Krishna. So it has to, the living entity, his free will is part of his very being. It has to be there. Of course, we are, it's mentioned that we are of the category of the marginal potency. That means we have a tendency to surrender to Krishna or not surrender. And we, unfortunately, have taken that wrong choice. And we are misusing now that free will. And we get slapped by the material energy. So one who has actually come to the intelligent point in that whole sojourn, he decides that, I'm tired of this slapping. I've had enough of it. Right? So then he decides he wants to engage his free will again, as it's meant to be used, and he surrenders to Krishna. But Krishna never forces anything. He's just waiting for us to come to that correct point again. But as we explained in our class, that requires determination to come to that correct point. Do we really want Krishna? Because ultimately, I guess, he doesn't want us to make the wrong choice again. So he wants us to be absolutely convinced and can come to the point of absolute surrender where we'll say, no more, I've had enough of it. This material world, right? So we have to get rid of all those traces of that desire to be separate and independent and use that free will properly. And that free will is meant to be properly engaged in serving Krishna according to our desire. So it's an unfortunate position for us. But that's why there is so much Shastra and there is so much support. You know, there's so much Vedic literature, isn't it? Just to try and convince us. We take a lot of convincing, isn't it? Otherwise, it could be all done with one verse. But we take a lot of convincing. There's the Gita, there's Bhagavatam, there's Puranas, and on and on and on. And then we have the Shruti and Smriti. We have so many supplementary literatures given by the sages to convince us that just engage your free will as it's meant to be engaged and surrender again to Krishna. Stop all this silliness and stop your suffering. Ultimately, everyone is seeking happiness and pleasure, isn't it? We're not seeking the opposite. Does anyone want to seek unhappiness or displeasure? It's the motivation for us all the time. We're pleasure seeking. So all this Vedic literature is meant to situate us again in our proper situation where we can experience that proper pleasure and proper satisfaction. And that only comes from our re-establishing a relationship with Krishna. Well, culturally, we'd say it's not correct. We should try to learn to serve their right hand, if possible. Like I say, it's not culturally correct. It's even insulting in some ways. If you want to insult someone, you hand them something with your left hand, isn't it, in the Vedic culture? If you want to insult them, you give them something with your left hand. Because that's considered the muchi hand. One uses that hand for cleaning himself and evacuating. It's hard to give you probably a satisfying answer to that question. Of course, if one only has one hand, I don't think the devotees would be offended. Right? But if your hand is either you don't have one or it's inoperable, there'd be no offence. So we should try and use that right hand. Try and make some endeavour. And we may not be able to write with it, but we can do some service with it. Isn't it? And maybe we need to do more exercise with it to make it stronger. Yes. Sorry. Just speak up a little bit. Well, I think that's fairly straightforward, isn't it? We have given so many lives. Of course, for us, it's hard to think, it's hard to us to appreciate that we have a long history. According to my understanding, what Srila Prabhupada has mentioned, to get to this human form of life, you've got to take 8,400,000 births. Right? So that's a pretty long history, isn't it? And so many lives we've had. There are 400,000 species of human life. So generally in that human form of life, it's where you actually have some capacity to understand who you are. So we've had many human lives even, and who knows what we've done in those human lives. So it's very rare, it's rare to get a human birth, of course, but also in that sojourn, it's very rare to come in contact with Krishna and Guru. as mentioned in the Shastras, Brahmanda Brahmite Konya Bhagavan Jeev, Guru Krishna Sadi Pai Bhakti Lata Peej. If one is very fortunate, he comes in contact with Guru. And the Guru, of course, gives him Krishna. And so that's a very rare event. So if we have that opportunity, we need to take advantage of it and just give this one life to Krishna. Who knows, you know, we've had so many lives, and what's been the result of those lives? What have we achieved? That's all forgotten, it's gone, isn't it? It's gone in history. So the human form of life is rare, and coming to the platform of being able to serve Krishna is extremely rare. Extremely rare. So why not give this one life to Krishna? We've given so many lives to so many different things. Just give this one life of whatever we have left. 30, 40, 50, 10 years maybe, 5 years maybe. Because we don't know. Srila Prabhupada, he mentions that there's danger in every step in this world. As we know, people are dying daily. I think in Australia, isn't it? 400 people die every day. If I put those 400 bodies in front of you and said, look, all these people have died today, you'd probably think, gee, that's pretty serious, isn't it? We don't see all that. We don't see it. And we forget about it. And we're full of life and full of energy, and we think it's life's just going to go on. But there is no guarantee. No guarantee whatsoever. And sometimes death comes. It's not like everyone has the opportunity to prepare. Once I was standing on a curb, I was doing some door-to-door sales. And I was about to step off the curb. And I thought, oh, maybe I should look. And just as I looked, this car went past and just about took my nose off. And I was thinking, how fickle this life is. If I'd just taken that step without the looking, because there's not many good results of people being hit by motor cars at 80 kilometres an hour. Usually the life is finished, just like that. So even for a devotee, there's no guarantee that you're not going to, you know, die in a car accident or some other unfortunate event. And throughout the history that I've seen in the time that I've been a devotee, many of my godbrothers have left. They all thought that they had a future. I'm thinking I've got a future, but there is no guarantee. It's a very dangerous world. It's treacherous. So therefore we take advantage of that life that we have and just give this life to Krishna, surrender to Krishna. Because other than that, what awaits us? More of the same. And it's not pleasant. We talk about the evils of birth, death, old age and disease. For those of us now who are, you know, creeping into our old age, it's not pleasant. Everything starts wearing out. Things just don't work like they used to. It becomes uncomfortable, so many aches and pains. When you're young and you're full of life, Virchandra, you're a healthy young man. But that healthy young body will go. And Prabhupada even cited his own example. He said, once I was running and jumping and now I'm taking the stick. So as devotees, we have seen the futility of material life, and we want to create that bright future for ourselves. So why chase after anything else other than service to Krishna? Just dedicate this life to Krishna. Right? So whether you're a grihastha or otherwise, just dedicate your life to Krishna. Of course, you have many other duties perhaps to distract you, but your main object is surrendering to Krishna and giving this one life. Anything else? Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.